This is Catherine O'Connell and welcome to Lawyer on Air. If you are looking for inspirational stories about women in law, then this is the podcast for you. Join me and my lawyer ladies as we enjoy a glass of wine after a hard day at work and talk about the world of women in law. It's my passion to share stories of amazing legal ladies who are working as in-house legal counsel, who have law firm roles, who are leading on boards, and who are doing law differently. From time to time, I will also invite special guests on the show to share their insights on legal recruiting and tips for getting hired as a successful lawyer in Japan. I hope you will enjoy getting to know these amazing women who I am so proud to share a profession with. I'm glad you're here and I hope you enjoy the show. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Lawyer on Air podcast. In this podcast episode, I share with you another diverse story of a woman working in the law in Japan. I'm Catherine, the host of the show, and I'm a lawyer based in Tokyo for more than 20 years, and I love helping unlock the wisdom of the stories that women lawyers never tell. What I've learned in my career in law so far is don't postpone. Now is the best time of your life to move towards your joy. Don't wait until next month or next year. Take a small action now to start your journey. Those are the words of Saki Nakahara, who is my guest today on the Lawyer on Air podcast. Saki is the founder and an immigration lawyer at Small Seasons & Co. She provides clients with assistance for their business setup, visa applications, and other legal services. Saki is passionate about arts and culture, and through her legal office, in particular where capacity allows, she provides specialized services to artists, creators, and anyone interested in exploring Japan's rich arts and culture scene. Born in the UK, Saki spent her formative years immersed in diverse environments across the globe. She was educated at the Canadian International School in Singapore, the Shanghai Community International School. She undertook a summer program at SGH Warsaw School of Economics, and she graduated from Keio University in Japan with a Bachelor of Arts in Sociology in 2015. After a variety of experience in different industries, different roles, and after an inspiring experience in hospitality, she rejoined her childhood love of the law, first studying for the Shihoshoshi exam, then shifting to qualify to become a Gyosei Shoshi. She passed the Gyosei Shoshi exam successfully in 2022 and established her own immigration law firm in July 2023. With this combination of passion for tea ceremony, her expertise in law and marketing, Saki is dedicated to fostering a deeper appreciation for Japanese culture and heritage on her entrepreneurial journey, while striving to see how all the dots connect in her daily work. On this episode, Saki shares how working in another industry, such as working in hospitality, can teach you a lot about how to interact with your clients. She also shares how delving into the realm of how we actually want to feel and what emotions we want to express during working with our clients is pivotal in how we're going to experience satisfaction with our work. I'll take a bet that most lawyers don't consider how we want to feel or what emotions we want to have as part of our decision process to decide what kind of lawyer we want to become. I found this part of our conversation absolute gold. You'll also hear Saki's advice to look out for that closed mindset and being wholly driven to what we think we have to be, to what we think we have to do, when actually it's waiting for you not to be the biggest or the best or the hardest thing, but to do the thing that we need to actually do with more an open mindset, and that way we can find our own true path. And Saki shares her favorite book, which is a good one for those who want to hunker down and stay safe for a little while, what she would be doing if she wasn't a legal specialist, something you don't know about her, and some other fun facts. Let's get into it. Hello, Saki, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Catherine. Thanks so much for having me today.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you. I've been waiting for you to come on the show, and I know we're going to meet up in person soon, but just take it to a sort of virtual wine bar or restaurant. Tell me where you love to go and what your choice of beverage would be off the menu today.
I would like to take you to Kakiden in Shinjuku. I don't know if you've heard of the restaurant before, but it is a kaiseki restaurant. They serve amazing Japanese authentic cuisine. And if I could give you a quick story about this, actually. So kaiseki is basically a stone that was used by a monk to warm his stomach so he doesn't feel the hunger. And so kaiseki is supposed to be a simple food that is provided actually as part of tea ceremony before guests enjoy the main matcha. So it's very simple, but to me, they don't actually give too much simple. It's very, you'll be full.
After 20 years in Japan, I'm still learning every day. That is amazing. I did not know that that's what
Oh.
kaiseki meant. Wow. Okay. Yeah. And I've been to many of them, but I've never really dissected the word and the origin. So thank you for that. What do you normally have with your kaiseki? Do you have anything non-alcoholic or alcoholic, or is it just matcha is best with it? Or is it bef matcha comes after? So what do you have with your kaiseki?
Usually, I never drink sake, but I have sake when it's kaiseki because it's
Oh.
just served. And I realize that it's nice to have enjoy sake once in a while. I just have a little bit, but it goes really well with the food.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you for that. That's really interesting. And we will pop Kakiden into the show notes later for everyone
Great.
having a little adventure there. Thank you so much. Well, I want to talk a little bit about your background first, Saki. And I think if you go back to when you were a child or in your young adult years, do you remember at that time what maybe careers you were thinking of or what you were dreaming about for the future?
I wanted to be many things, but one of them actually was a lawyer. When I was 11 years old or something, I just wanted to be a lawyer. And I remember myself carrying the book of six codes,
Oh,
Rinpoche.
sorry. This is when you're 11 years old. You're carrying.
Yes.
Okay.
Very ambitious and a little bit embarrassing if I look back now. But I was just memorizing the Constitution. I thought it's cool that, I would know those things. I can be really helpful when I grow up. But then I watched a TV series, a Japanese TV series about a lawyer who was struggling, who was kind of receiving hatred from a victim's family. And I was 11 years old then, so I got really scared. It was almost traumatizing. So I said, oh, this is not for me. This is actually way more serious than I thought. So that actually ended there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it just shows you the influence of TV upon all kinds of people at different ages of their life. That's, yeah. I'm just wondering how on earth you got to be interested in law at that age. Was there somebody around you or something that made you interested? I mean, you don't suddenly wake up and go, I want to be a lawyer, or maybe you do. What happened there? Do you know what was going on to carry around the Rinpoche, the six books of law of Japan?
I think I was influenced by, again, another TV drama called Beginner, I think it was. And I just saw them working with their friends, having an active discussion to solve something, to help people. And that just impression of that looked really appealing to me. And I think I always take action very quickly. When I'm inspired to do something, I do it right away. So I think that's,
Wow. I guess the Rinpoche, the six laws of Japan were not just hanging around the house, that you had to go and get them from somewhere. So did you
So,
like put your hand up to your parents or whoever was around you to buy me those books?
I think I did. I don't have clear memory of it, but I was actually in living in Singapore then, and I watched the TV in Singapore. So when I had a chance to go back to Japan, or maybe it was my dad, I asked him to get it for me or something.
Goodness.
But I had the book in my hand somehow.
Amazing. That is amazing. Well, look where it's brought you. And you're now an immigration lawyer at your own company, Small Seasons and Co. And we're going to talk about that shortly. But again, just go back a little bit more because you had those six laws of Japan books in your possession, and then you got a little bit turned off. But you've come also from that, what I would say is a non-law education background, and now you are this law business owner, and a legal professional. So having watched you over the last several years, I really think your story is so terrific. It's a story
Thank
of
you.
Resilience and pivoting. So you did actually graduate from KO University with a BA in sociology and started out your career teaching and hospitality. So tell us a bit about that part of your journey from when you were holding on to those books to then going off to university and graduating.
So I spent most of my childhood abroad, going to international school, and I knew I wanted to come back to Japan for university, and I wanted to learn more about how I can better serve the community. That's why I wanted to major in sociology. I also wanted to make sure that I was ready for Japan because I was aware that I have turned into something very different from when I was little before leaving Japan. And I felt, I don't think anybody told me to do this, or I don't know where I got this pressure from, but I felt like I had to be more Japanese than I am now to be able to go back to Japan. And then I thought, okay, what is the best way for me to do that? And the answer was hospitality, because that's where you learn the manners, that's where you learn how Japanese people communicate, how they greet each other, to how they are there for each other. And that was the main reason behind me trying those jobs in the hospitality field when I was at the university.
Wow, that is amazing, because you know, overseas does shape you. You can't take it out of you if you've grown up overseas for a lot of your earlier life and then coming back to Japan. I totally understand the pressure to be so-called more Japanese, to fit in, right? And just gold what you said, that the hospitality industry can teach you about omotenashi, about how to interact with Japanese. I've never heard anyone say that before, the value of hospitality industry. That's incredible, because it really sets you up so well for all the interactions you're going to have over your life with people. Wow, fantastic. Then you wanted to be a shihoshoshi, which is an occupation in Japan related, well, in the law. And then you became actually pivoting to become a gyoseishoshi. So those who may not be familiar with what those two professions are in Japan, can you help them understand what shihoshoshi is and what a gyoseishoshi is?
Yes, sure. So shihoshoshi and gyoseishoshi are both legal specialists. They do have different areas of practice. And from my perspective, shihoshoshi, they do more work related to company registration or real estate registration. Those are the main fields that they cover, which is very broad, very complicated and difficult. And gyoseishoshi lawyer is also a legal specialist. And they cover areas like preparing and submitting documents to the government offices, like ministries, city halls, immigration bureaus, for my case, things like that. And the area here, again, is very broad. It could be from visa applications to getting business license or permits or contract drafting in some cases where there are no possibility for disputes and things like that.
Wow, that's a really great summary. Is there something else there that you wanted to add?
So from my perspective, gyoseishoshi lawyers actually tend to be more independent in their practice. So instead of working for a firm, they start their own practice. And because the practice areas are so broad, I feel like they're more entrepreneurial, because they can explore so many different fields and can be connected to so many different businesses.
That's really interesting. I didn't realize that. I do know a few gyoseishoshi who definitely are running their own independent office, just like you are. That's interesting, because I think that ties into why you are doing that now, because you can explore, because you're a really creative person. And so I know that the shihoshoshi exams really challenging. I don't know how people pass them. It's really hard. And that experience, though, of doing those exams and not taking that path led you, though, to the path of doing the gyoseishoshi experience and exam and passing that. So can you tell us a bit more then about that? Because I think it's really, looking back in hindsight, it's probably a blessing in disguise for you. I just
Yes.
wanted to hear about that because sometimes we might take one path in life and then try and try and try, and we figure it out that actually another path is much better for us. And I, now I'm hearing you talk about creativity and being your own person. I feel there's some tie-in there. So if you could, I'd love you to tell us a bit more about that part of your career journey.
So when I decided that I wanted to go for Shiho Shoshi exams, I didn't know about Gyosei Shoshi exams at all. I just actually found about the occupation as a Shiho Shoshi lawyer from Hello Work from 13 years old. It's a book. So I started studying for it without knowing there was another option. I didn't even explore other options, to be fair. And I've taken it a few times, didn't make it. And then I think around my third time, I was being a little bit stubborn. When I was working with another immigration lawyer, she actually asked me, "We are Gyosei Shoshi lawyers. Why do you want to be a Shiho Shoshi lawyer?" And I actually didn't know, which was scary. I think this is the mindset that I was used to having, that harder is better. Like the bigger the challenge, the better. So I just wanted to pass Shiho Shoshi exam no matter what. I didn't think about what my actual everyday is going to be like as a Shiho Shoshi lawyer or a Gyosei Shoshi lawyer. So I should have stopped there, but I didn't. But then the next two exams that I've taken, I didn't make it I was short by 2 points. And that's when I said, okay, I need a break. I was burnt out. I didn't really feel motivated to do it. I wasn't confident in myself either. So I stopped and just took Gyosei Shoshi exam. Like, why not? And for me, it went very smoothly. And also, the more I learned about Gyosei Shoshi lawyer, the occupation seemed a better fit for me, actually. So, yeah, that's the story.
Wow, it's a great story because there you were, you didn't really know the options were there, or at least the Gyosei Shoshi option was there until someone sort of says, "Why are you doing this?" And it's often someone else can see it in us. Why are we pushing ourselves for something that actually may not be the best thing for us? What did it teach you, that process, of doing the exams and pushing and pushing, and that mindset of yours? Has your mindset kind of changed now, do you think?
Yes, I think so. I realized that it's important to really listen to yourself than what the old you or the society in general might make you think a certain way. What I mean by that is, as I said, I felt like passing Shiho Shoshi exam because it was more difficult for me. I felt like it was a bigger accomplishment for me, but that doesn't matter anymore after, I guess, you graduate from university where it's all about competition or achievements, fighting to be the number one in class or landing on the best job offer there is. So that's something I learned. And also, because I spent so many years trying for Shiho Shoshi exam, my legal knowledge became very solid. And I was the kind of learner who would study a lot, can do fairly well in exams, but my knowledge wouldn't stay that long. But this time, the legal knowledge, it really stayed. And I'm surprised that it did. And it has nothing but positive impact on me, actually. So, like you said, it really was actually a blessing for me.
What's been the positive impact for you? Have you just found your niche, decided to open up your office? And we're going to talk about that very soon. What's been that benefit then that's come from knowing that you don't have to be number one or best, and that knowing that that solid knowledge has stayed with you? It's really interesting.
For me, it actually helps me do my job better. When I was studying, I didn't really feel like the knowledge was mine, so I couldn't imagine myself applying these laws or regulations into practice. But when these knowledge became very solid, I could feel more confident in the knowledge that I have, and even now when I'm working on some immigration law case, visa application, I see all the knowledge from the civil law, I can use it here. Or, oh, there was a case in the constitution that I can apply the same thinking to, for example. And those wouldn't have happened, I think, knowing my own studying style. But it does, and it's helping me be a better lawyer, I think.
Oh, wow. I love that. It's become quite real for you then, right? You can actually grasp it and see the practical use of that study that's gone solid for you, as you called it, and now you're applying it in your daily work. How interesting. I just imagine if you got the Shihoshoshi exam and were sitting there, but you didn't feel the same way, that it wasn't making you feel it was real. You couldn't see the application of civil law, for example. Imagine that if you'd that feeling you might have if you'd got that exam and were still unsatisfied in the knowledge applying to your daily work. And yet here you are taking a pivot and got somewhere else, and you can see it in front of you. It's real.
Yeah, I'm really glad it happened, and it has been a life-changing event for me.
Wow, what would you say then to others who might be struggling around this, that they're trying to do the bar or they're trying to get into the best law firm or trying really hard to go bigger and harder and higher? What would you say to them?
This might not be be the best advice, but I would say take your time. It might also depend on where you are right now. If you just graduated from university, maybe it's okay to give your best. Like you said once, Catherine, it's a ticket, right? Passing the bar or getting the qualification is a ticket to actually starting your own practice, and it's a whole new future for you. So I think it's great to give your best. But for someone who is at a point where there are things that's happening in their life other than themselves, could be their family, could be their friends, could be anything, I would like to encourage them to take their time just so you can have space for your own life to just live happily. There is a pressure, but you also have other things happening in your life. And maintaining that balance helps you mentally, I think. That studying law, I think you have to sacrifice something to a certain extent, but the sacrifice doesn't have to be massive that you're going to regret about it later. You can live the life that you want while also giving your best, but maybe just slower or in a different way.
That is gold. Yeah. And thanks for reminding me about that ticket thing that I said way back. It's so true, right? You buy your ticket, you get on the bus, but you got to know your destination, or you've got to know when to get off or when to take a break, right? Your journey is not always just one solid ride from A to B. There are things on the way that stop you or that you are purposely stopping to take a rest. And I think I'm glad you mentioned that. It's sort of where you've been, you got the ticket, but you've actually taken time and made space in your own life in order to get to where you are. And I think your story is just a classic example of how you can do different things and arrive at the destination and be happy that you've got there and you're intact and you've had rest on the way and nourishment and all kinds of things that have happened to get to where you are. It's a really great story. So you also had some work experience outside of hospitality in Asumi Legal and also at June Advisors Group. How did those experiences also help you consolidate your career focus and get your practical experience that helped with all the things that you've been telling us so far?
I think the main thing actually that I learned from working for June Advisors Group was more of an emotional learning. I realized the kind of emotional state that the clients have when they come to immigration law firms. They're very anxious sometimes. It's normal because visa is something that basically grounds them to their life in Japan. And I also realized that when they come to immigration law firms, it's not really cheerful. And I like cheerful. I like happy conversations in general. And this was a great learning for me because I actually, when I first worked for Journal Advisors Group, I thought I can be good at it, but maybe I needed something more in addition to immigration law, because I wanted to enjoy the beginning of the journey of people coming to Japan, talk about their business while also making sure that everything goes smoothly for them. So yeah, that was the biggest learning for me, actually.
So that's really interesting. So you're talking about having clients help them from the start of their journey, not only when they're feeling anxious about a visa issue and they come to you with that kind of feeling in their body. So helping them from the really good beginning where they can be cheerful at the start. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that. And I realized that legal specialists might not always be someone they come to looking forward to meeting. They would drop by the office to hand their passport or residence card, but the touch points are usually very brief. And the kind of conversation you have are also very logistical. And I wanted to have a different kind of interaction with the people I meet.
So that's so true. I mean, I can remember the number of lawyer people who come to see me, maybe back in New Zealand when I was there, and they weren't always in the happiest of moods, or they didn't really want to see a lawyer. It was like, I guess, going to a dentist. But people used to always say that going to a dentist, at least you felt the improvement afterwards, but in often with lawyers, you don't feel that immediately afterwards. And so it's quite hard meeting people who are in that kind of space. How do you make them feel or help them feel a little bit more relaxed or make that conversation a little bit more happier? Have you got some tips on that? I'd love to hear them if you do.
For me, it's about being really interested in their purpose here, like why they are in Japan. And maybe my background in marketing is also making me interact with my clients in this way. But I'm really, if they are starting a business, I cannot stop thinking about how I can help them with their business or meet the right people or go to the right places. And I think starting your own business is a great step for self-actualization, expressing yourself or creating something that's uniquely theirs. And so I always have that in my mind, like they're here for a reason and I want to help them beyond just this, one simple visa application, for example. And I'm not sure if all the clients want this, so I try not to be pushy, but I have that mindset, and some clients, I think, appreciate that as well.
That's great. Well, that self-actualization has happened for you yourself with your own business. And I think that's also how you can start helping other business owners because you've done it yourself. So tell us about Small Seasons & Co. How did you come up with that name? It's so delightful.
Thank you so much. It's actually my name in Japanese.
Oh, really?
So you write Small Seasons, and that's my name, Saki.
Oh, there you go. Interesting. That's lovely. Yeah. Tell me more.
And my parents gave me this name because they wanted me to enjoy the transitions between the four seasons, whether it's a warmer wind or you see a new flower for the season, smell something different. So basically the small seasons. And I think it is key to living your life in a fulfilling way. And I kind of wanted to include that in the company name.
It's sort of like almost now, isn't it? When we're coming out of winter, we're not quite into spring, really. It's kind of in between seasons. So it's your particular season right now to enjoy that through your name. Yeah. Wow. Well, your firm is a bilingual legal office. You're based in Tokyo. You're led by yourself. I had a look at your website and it says your expertise is in the visa applications, business incorporation, as you said before. And also you do a little bit of in the cultural and creative sector. So what's sort of special about Small Seasons, do you think, compared to others? Maybe it's communication first or something else.
Yes. So I think it's the energy that I think I can bring to the clients. Because of my background in the HR consultancy, I have come to learn that the communication is way more profound than I realized. And it's about adapting your own communication style to meet the needs of the clients. So I am always mindful of what their preference is. Do they want to receive everything in advance, in bullet points, super detailed, or do they want to have things straightforward, clear? Don't give me too much detail, but let me know the things that I need to know. I'm very aware of the different styles of communication, so I will try to adapt for the best communication experience. And also, I want to be the biggest supporter for my clients in that our touch point might just be one visa application or a company setup, but I will always be curious about what they want to achieve in Japan or the path they want to take. And we like to support them as much as possible. If they want to have my support, I still am trying to figure out how exactly I can support them. Maybe it's marketing, it's the grant opportunities, but I will always be their biggest supporter. And that, I think, could be something unique about us.
Yeah, I think so, because I don't really think lawyers think of themselves as their client's biggest supporter. I think we think we're doing a transaction, or doesn't mean we do it without heart. It just means perhaps that's one and done, or it happens in that moment and we've helped them. But I don't think we take it higher to a kind of more philosophical level that you're doing, saying you're the biggest supporter. That really starts to reframe things. I hadn't heard that before. I really love that. And I think that sort of is your mission and makes you stand out.
Thank you for that.
How do you find your clients? How did you find them in those first few months?
I got inquiries from my website, actually, or from Circle of Friends.
Circle of Friends, they're always your first. Seems to be where people come. And some people just come across you on the website. So you like to do marketing. Did you do marketing of your own firm?
Yes, I made the website on my own, and I'm also working on the SEO and whatever optimization that I can implement on my website.
Wow, great. And were there some challenges in those first few months that you had to overcome? Mm. Or maybe it's something like the opposites of that could be a good story too. Something that came up that you thought would be really hard, and then it was surprisingly easier than you thought.
So one of the biggest challenges for me was managing the client's expectation in the support I can give them. Like I mentioned, Gyosei Shoshi lawyers, what we practice is so broad. And even more from the client's perspective, we're just legal experts, so we should know everything related to all the legal matters in Japan. So I didn't have much information about that on my website. There were no disclaimers. There were not too much details in the beginning about my specialization. So I would just talk to clients and realize, oh, that's actually not my area of expertise. And I felt really bad for not being able to offer what they wanted from me. So that sense of regret and, oh, I could have done better feelings have really helped me to be more communicative on my website about what I do and what I can offer, and to also help myself understand what I want to do.
Yeah, help yourself to understand what you want to be offering, as well as having the clients, before they become your client, understand what you can and can't do. I was similar. I didn't have a real description or disclaimer or Q&A on the website at the start, because honestly, you don't know what you don't know sometimes, and you don't know what the clients do know and don't know. So it comes later. I think it was a few years later that I actually built up a Q&A saying, hey, I don't do this stuff, or do you need this? Well, you can go here, and I don't do this sort of work. And I try and explain that and have people go there first before they come and actually hire me. And I think it makes sense. And sometimes we just don't know that at the beginning, and it comes to us as we work through. But really great point that you picked out there about the challenge of, you know, managing client expectations and getting things right there to show what you offer and what they can expect from you from those offerings. Would you recommend to other people, other women, to set up their own business? And if you do, why would that be? Maybe it's not for everybody, but what kind of person is suited to opening their own business?
I 100% would like to recommend people opening their own office or business, because I feel like business is a modern place to put everything you have, your ideas, your experiences, your connections, your learnings, all of that into this special place that somehow takes all that in and grows on its own sometimes. And I think having that place would be like having this very strong core in your body that helps you move forward in life positively and strongly. So I'm a tea practitioner, and my sensei, she has 4 daughters. And she told me the reason why she became a sensei was because as she was raising her children, she thought, I am going to be nobody. I am going to just be so busy raising the children, and I don't know what I will be in the future. And so she felt that sense of needing to do something for her. And that's how she became a tea teacher. So that also encouraged me and help me reflect on having something that's your own. Maybe it doesn't have to be business, but I think it's a great way to start.
I love those words from your tea practitioner. Wow, amazing. And you're so right. I feel like it's running a business myself. Maybe this is what I was hearing when you were speaking, was it's like you've bought a lot of apples in your time, but now it's time to plant your own apple orchard. And right, and you see the seeds, you plant them, the trees grow. Again, they go through those seasons, which you talked about through your name. And then what you have on the trees, your produce that you've grown, is what you offer to the clients or the customers who come to you, right? So you're kind of giving the nourishment along the way, adding in all those bits and pieces to make it your orchard, right? Your place that you are growing and able to help other people from that. I kind of had that download as I was hearing you. I sort of had this visual of an orchard, and I feel like you've grown this orchard and it's going through different seasons. This is your orchard. You're not going out and buying apples from everyone else. You've got your own from your own experience of having bought them in the past or eaten them and know what's delicious and what can be offered that people will love and enjoy. And like this, it's a season, right? You are working through the seasons with your clients to help them from that first stage through their challenges, finding out more about them and taking it away that way. That's what I heard from what you said. I hope you like that.
I love that so much.
You talked about tea, and that's a really important part of Japanese traditional culture, and also teaches you a whole lot about patience and doing things in detail and getting things right the way that you do it. So it's part of, I think, your interest in culture and the creative sector. And I know that you sort of have helped people in the past do a lot with that cultural aspect. And even though I know you've kind of paused that work at the moment, can you tell me why that sort of area of work interests you?
It interests me because I feel like Japanese cultures and arts are the sectors that fundamentally will save us at the most difficult times. It helps us realize, it helps us slow down, to be more present, and to find things that's already there in life that can make your day. But at the same time, I also realized that financially, it's not the easiest sector to operate your business in. I felt that from my experience as a tea apprentice, where it's really expensive to maintain a tea class or to hold a Japanese tea ceremony. And also it's the area where making money out of it is considered a little taboo. It's not considered the best practice. And also people would just be so generous with their time and energy without getting any compensation. And that kind of worried me, because if there is no business, how would this sector evolve? Or if someone was interested, they will not be able to make a living. I was interested in tea, but I couldn't imagine myself really making a living with it. So that's where it began. And the grant opportunities for artists and creators, some people, they don't even know they exist, but the grants will cover some of the expenses for their own projects or their businesses related to traditional cultures and arts. So I wanted to be part of that movement to support the businesses in the sector.
That's so good. It's so worthy. And I think letting people know about the information they don't already know, right? The grants, it's almost like you in doing Shiho Shoshi and not knowing about Gyosei Shoshi option, right? It's something that we sometimes have to help others find and then help them get through that. So I hope that comes back again, that you're able to do that work, or that some collaborators can help you on that. But
yeah,
I loved how you said that the arts save us at our most difficult times. You know, music or art can be our saviors.
Yes.
So tell me then, after all of what we've talked about, I want you to finish this sentence for me. The most important thing or things I have learned in my career in law so far, or as a business owner, are ...
Don't postpone would be the biggest learning that I had. And what I mean by that is, now is probably the best time to take whatever action that you can take to move towards your joy or something that makes you happy. And don't wait until tomorrow or next week or next month, or next year to start moving in that direction. For example, starting a business, that sounds like something that is a huge step. But you can take one small action, like talking to someone who started a business. Or if you are interested in art, just go to a museum to see if you can look at it from a different perspective, maybe from the perspective of a business owner, whatever it is. Because if you take that action, somehow, if it's a path that you're meant to take, something will happen that makes you take the next step and then the next step. And usually, if it's associated with what you like, what you enjoy, then it's more likely that you will find those support or anything that you need to move forward in that path.
Great. And it's so true, the bite-sized pieces of something that you want to do, rather than thinking of the whole aspect, it can be daunting if you think, I'm going to run a business, especially if you compare it to people who have already got their business up and running. And you see that future person as your current self. It's very daunting, but taking it one by one, I love that. Small actions leading to the outcome.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, in your opinion then, what would be one of the most important personality or strengths that people should have to maybe nurture the business successfully as you are doing? You've talked about communication already as being very important. Is there anything else that would be really important to have for a business owner and to be successful in the law as you have?
Big picture thinking would be an important trait, or the perspective for anyone to have. I realized that there are a lot of cases when your option seems to be A, B, and C, but the actual option that's best for everyone is like option G or something. If you step back and think, what do they want? What do I want? What benefits them? What benefits me? What could we do together as a business or as individuals? That perspective always helps me think of, oh, actually, I can support them this way. And that actually is a win-win situation for both of us. It has happened so many times. So not just looking at those little pieces, like you said, but stepping back and just think of like the bigger picture of what each of us is trying to do, be helpful, if that makes sense.
It does make sense indeed. And what about then if you're someone who's quite a young professional who's probably come out of maybe law school and figuring out what to do, or maybe they're coming up from another profession and thinking about law. Is this one thing that you could tell them that would be really helpful for them to think about for their next step?
I would take time to think about how you would like to practice law or the feelings that come with it. Do you want to practice law to protect people? Do you want to practice law to go on an exciting journey with your clients? Or do you want it to be something that helps them at most difficult times? And I think knowing the kind of emotions that you want to have or that you feel like it's most right for you will help you see how you want to practice law and be creative about possible ways you can use law. And I'm saying this because also at the beginning of the podcast, you, Catherine, mentioned that you are featuring women who do law differently. And I feel like you're an advocate for people who are trying to do law differently. Thinking about how you want to feel when you practice law could be a way to figure out a way to do law your way.
Maybe I need to ask that question every time now, because how many lawyers amongst us have thought about how we want to feel when we practice law? What emotion we want when we practice law? I think we talk about often, I want to help people and I really love this topic and it's really interesting for me, but I don't know that we go to a level of emotion and feeling. But I just think we should be doing more of that, right? It really does drive me now, how I want to feel in my daily business, the clients that I want to work with, how I want us to feel together as we work together and come to the end and find a solution. But I don't know that I put a finger on that at the beginning and thought, how do I want to feel? What's my emotion? But it's something we actually need to really probably consider as lawyers. The other side of the knowing the black letter law and how to advise someone on the law or the business of law, but the what's behind that. I love that. That's very interesting. Yeah, I might steal that for another conversation asking people. They might not be able to answer it, but I'd love that to prompt people really well. Okay, so before we wind up, just the future of law, maybe in your own area of immigration or generally, how are you seeing the future of maybe the legal market in Japan in the next 5 or so years? What can you sort of see as maybe a crystal ball on the future of law? I'd love to hear what you think might happen.
I think more and more people will be starting their own business or finding ways to do things their way. And it could be the rise of freelancers and the artists and creators too. They are expected to be ready to be on their own as well. And I'm saying this because recently the Ministry of Cultural Affairs, they have published templates for artists and creators to use to protect, to know and protect their own rights, because there are usually no contracts in the sectors, or it's not common. So sometimes they get a business, but they don't really know what's going to happen to their artwork, whether it will be used as they are, or maybe they will change something about it. But those conversations don't really come up in the negotiation period sometimes, especially if it's a new creator who hasn't had experience working with companies. So what I see in the future is more and more people will have opportunities to know their own rights and to utilize law in a way that benefits them. So for me, I would love to find ways to support more people, get legally savvy and run their business in a way that makes them happy.
I wonder why the ministry put those templates out. I wonder if something triggered that. Do you know if anything happened like that to make them think about that, right? Think about the actual idea of having templates for people who are artists, creators to protect their work.
I think they're becoming more aware of the risks of not having contracts in place. And there are also conversations about artists, because they don't know their own rights, they end up losing a lot. It could be the money, it could be their own artwork. And so I think that was the one of the reasons
Interesting.
behind them publishing those.
Yeah, I mean their work is their creative work, and but protecting that, I guess there's so many challenges to protecting these days as well, with a lot of the AI that can, you can tell it to create an image, and you might say create it on the basis of what Saki just drew, but make it mine, but it's based on yours. So that could be a very interesting area, and may have prompted a lot of this too. Very interesting. I'd love to connect that link with the cultural affairs into the show notes later. So please let us know. That'd be great. And I hope that you get back into this area of work and that you can help more. And if people are listening, definitely reach out to Saki if there's some way that this could collaborate together to work really well for this protection of the arts and culture surrounding us. I really love that. Thank you so much. I think we're going to wind down the conversation now with on a lighter note, with some of the quick fire questions I love to ask people. So if you're ready, can we go?
I'm
Okay.
ready. Yes.
Can you share me a book that you've been reading or have read recently, or maybe a podcast that you recommend? And I hope it's not The Civil Law, but tell me what you've been reading or listening to that you want to share.
There's this book called The Comfort Zone. It's different from the book that encourages you to get out of your comfort zone. It's actually advising you to stay in your comfort zone, to live a life that you really love. And I really appreciated the book when I needed it, when I felt like I'm happy with what I'm doing, but I think I'm feeling too much stress. So I highly recommend this book to anyone who feels like they want to slow down, something's not working, to kind of reflect.
We will put that on the show notes. That sounds very interesting. And if you weren't, Saki, doing what you're doing as an immigration lawyer, law business owner, what do you think you would be doing? I'm so interested to hear this answer.
I think I would be sitting on the grass every day playing with dogs and animals.
And having fun.
And yes, having fun. Sometimes living in Tokyo, I really miss the feeling of grass, because I think it's because I was born in the UK and I did grow up touching the grass with my feet. So I miss that. And I also love animals. The interaction makes me feel happy. So,
Oh yeah, I love it too. I mean, growing up in New Zealand, the same, that slinky, cool feeling of grass under your feet. Oh, love it. You've got me thinking about that now. All right, what's something about you that a lot of people don't know?
I think one of it is that I think a lot about the decision or things I do. So I recently bought a perfume after 1 year of searching for a perfume because I couldn't choose the one I wanted. And I think it's too much because I spent 1 year without a perfume. But I finally found one that I thought was meaningful, and that if people ask me what scent it is, I can actually contribute to Japanese culture because it's related to it. So I'm really happy with the decision, but I sometimes spend too much time.
Oh,
Yes.
what is it? I have to ask you. Come on, tell me.
It's the perfume is called Moss Temple by Kitoa, the Japanese fragrance brand, but it reminds you of the scent that you feel, that you experience at the temple after the rain.
Oh, amazing. Wow. Ooh,
Yes.
I'm the other way. I smell something. I want that, and I'll get it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, interesting. And I'll share it with you sometime shortly. So
Yes.
please bring your Moss Temple as well. It'd be great to compare notes, like literally perfume notes. All right. I think I probably know the answer to this question. Choosing activity you would do in your free time, if you could do it. And maybe it's the grass and the dogs and animals situation. But is there another activity that you would choose outside of maybe tea or what we've talked about with grass and playing with dogs? Is there something else that's also there that you'd love to do?
I love to read. And I love to read novels because I usually spend a lot of time reading legal documents, law, regulations, or practical books, like business books. But it's really important to just enjoy the life that novels have to offer you. And I really appreciate those moments. So I'll
Yeah.
be reading.
I'm looking for a really good one, actually. If anyone knows one, I'm looking for my next novel. I love getting inside the story, and then afterwards, when I've closed it at the end, I'm still thinking about that story for days and days. I haven't found one of those yet for my Golden Week reading, so I'm looking forward to something. If someone's listening, let me know. And final thing is, if you were given an opportunity to spend a day with someone, anyone, it could be someone from history, it could be anybody, who would that be, and what would you talk to them about?
I actually thought a lot about this, and I would like to spend time with the grandchildren of my tea sensei. And my tea sensei actually passed away a few years ago, but I still stay in touch with her grandchildren. And because we both experienced a huge loss, and without her, we don't have a place to practice tea for now. So I kind of want to be there with them. And they are super lovely. And I want to take them to Kabukiza, like my sensei did, eat the curry at the nearby curry restaurant where she took me to, and just have this like interesting experience with the younger children. I think that would be an amazing day
And
for
talk
me.
about her, right? And talk about things that
Yes.
she gave you. Wow, that's lovely. What a lovely place to end the chat. Thank you so much, Saki, for
Thank you.
having the time, saying yes, and coming on the show. I've just been such a pleasure to talk with you and connect in this way. And so many inspirational and different insights you've provided today. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And for listeners who are really interested in connecting and learning more from you, from what you've said, is where's the best place to reach out to you? Would it be on your own website or LinkedIn, or where would that be?
Maybe my LinkedIn or my website, anywhere. I'm happy to connect with anyone. So please do
Great.
reach out to me and we could grab a coffee.
Yeah, well, we'll put those details in the show notes. And honestly, if you've listened to this episode and you have been inspired by some of the things, or all of the things that Saki has talked about, please do let us know. Tell us through giving us a review. Hop onto our website. You can actually leave a voice review. You can just click and
Wow.
record your voice for 1 minute telling us your feedback. But if you're a little bit more shy, you can go over and leave us a text review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to your podcast. You can also go ahead and share this episode with someone who would really enjoy listening and live this inspiring, extraordinary life that we do in the law. Thanks to everybody today. I'll see you on the next episode. Cheers, kampai, and bye for now. Thank you so much for listening today to this episode of Lawyer on Air. I really hope that you were inspired by the story you heard and that you discovered something new about women in the law. Please subscribe to the show so that you don't miss future episodes. And if you can think of even just one person to share this episode with, that would make my day. I invite you to connect with me to talk more. Jump on over to LinkedIn or Instagram where you can find me, or send me a message via my website contact page. That's all from me today. I look forward to seeing you right here on the next episode of Lawyer on Air. Cheers, kampai, and bye for now.